Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. My name's Matt Bingle. I'm one of the co-hosts and the editor for this episode. I would like to welcome you to our 200th episode. Can you believe it? We can't, and chances are you can't either. What better way to celebrate our 200th episode than with a really, really big guest? This is a huge honor for us because our guest today is the puppeteer of Bert Grover and Oscar the Grouch on Sesame Street and Fozzie Bear, Animal, and Miss Piggy. Eric Jacobson is our special guest, and we are so honored that he's our guest for this very special 200th episode. Now, if you'll excuse me, I better play the intro. I'll see you in about 30 seconds, and I'll be back at the end for some final thoughts. Now, I better say the magic words. Roll it! I've always wanted to do that.
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy to be here with us. Thank you for joining. As always, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, as always, our co-hosts, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingle. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Hello, everybody. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you for asking. Wonderful. Chris, what do you have for today?
Yes, today's guest is a puppeteer who, since the 90s, has been one of the lead Muppet performers on Sesame Street and the Muppets, inheriting classic characters such as Grover, Bert, Oscar, Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Animal, various others. He was also a puppeteer on Bear in the Big Blue House, The Book of Pooh, and many more that we'll touch base on later. Here he is, Eric Jacobson. Eric, happy to have you here.
Hey, howdy. How you doing?
Howdy. Doing great.
Thank you.
Yes, so for those who don't know you, could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think you kind of hit some of the highlights there. I'm a puppeteer, both with Sesame Workshop, working on Sesame Street, performing, like you said, Bert and Grover, Oscar the Grouch now, and one half of the Two-Headed Monster, and Guy Smiley when he makes an appearance. And then over with Disney, I work with the classic Muppet Show characters. And I've been doing that since, let's just say the early 2000s. And so before it changed hands, before it actually was, everything moved over to Disney. So in all of this, actually, you know, it all started with the Jim Henson Company. And that's where I started. I started out as an intern at the Jim Henson Company in college. And so that was kind of my entrance into all of this. I was a film student at NYU. And this is like right, let's see, I think my first year there, Jim Henson passed away, and that kind of sent me reeling. And you know, when I stopped spinning, when my head stopped spinning, I was pointed in a new direction, and I just knew I had to do something to help continue this great man's legacy.
That's awesome. So, in terms of, like, you know, Sesame Street, how did you first begin working for them?
Yeah, so I was in New York. I had that internship with the Jim Henson Company. And it was there that, you know, I learned of these puppeteer workshops that they would hold every now and then. And Sesame Street, in particular, was in need of a lot of new a lot of new blood because they had just expanded their set. And it was called Around the Corner.
Oh,
and
yes.
They had to populate this set with a lot of characters. And so, and they had a lot of other productions that were up and running too at the same time. So they just really needed a lot of new puppeteers. And I learned about these workshops, and I was a puppeteer with a company, a theater company in New York at the time, and I was really honing my skills there and just on my own too. I said, hey, can I sit in on one of these workshops? I did. Jane Henson was running the workshop. I gleaned a lot from just sitting in on this workshop, and I went back to my dorm, and I just worked on everything that I saw them do. And then eventually was able to find myself invited to a workshop to participate. And I did a number of those, a bunch of them. And, let's see. I remember it being at one of these workshops, and Jane Henson was running it. And afterwards, in front of everybody, she said, and Eric, you've been working with us for a little bit now, right? And I said, no, but I can start right away if you want me to. It was the most amazing, flattering compliment that I could ever have imagined coming from her. And it wasn't too long after that I did wind up getting a call to come in and take a look around at Sesame Street. Yeah. So
nice.
It was, yeah, I remember that one moment. It was the most amazing thing. Because, Jane, along with Jim, invented this craft. And I really looked up to her.
Yeah.
And she and Cheryl Henson, her daughter, they would come and, see the different shows that I was in New York. And both amazing, amazingly encouraging, and just incredible supporters of the art, just across the board. And Cheryl, in particular, I think, she really put a lot of belief in me, and made me feel like, oh, I could do this. I could do this. It was really, yeah. They were both instrumental.
Oh, that's wonderful. So do you remember your first day on Sesame Street and the first puppet that you performed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are definitely things that you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like I said, I was first asked to just come in and observe. And that day, I remember I got a call and from Danette DeSena, and she left a message saying, Kevin Clash, the senior tape, because you you do all these workshops, but then you'd have to also make a tape of your work so that they'd have something to put on file. And Kevin's senior tape, and he wants you to come in and observe on Sesame Street. So I I went in and yeah, I think I totally blew off the job that I had at the time. I was working for a post-production house in New York. And I was like, yeah, I got to go do this. and not get paid, you know, just go in and observe. Right. And, I did that. I went in and this was at Kaufman Studios in Queens. And, the first person I meet is Kevin. He's there. And then the second person who walks into the room, I couldn't believe it, was Frank Oz. And this was off season too. This was like in the summer. And, you know, even I knew that Frank wasn't around that much those days, you know. And Kevin introduces me to Frank as one of our new puppeteers. I was like, oh my gosh, what? I mean, I was just coming in to observe, I thought. And yeah, that was amazing. That was my first day on the set. And I observed like a hawk, and I did that for quite some time before I actually got to put a puppet on. And let's see, I remember getting the first time I was scheduled, and the bit got bumped. I went in for the day and the bit got bumped, so I didn't get to actually perform. And so when they did do it, they didn't call me in. They just used whoever was around. But I kept going in and observing, and it was getting close to Christmas time. I think it was maybe the last day before Sesame Street was breaking for the holidays. And Samuel Ramey, the opera singer, was on set, and he was there to sing a song about the letter L. And Peter Lintz and David Rudman were there. And they turned to me and they, you know, I'd been hanging around for quite some time, and I think they felt bad for me. Cause I'd been there for like, I'd been coming in off and on throughout the season, you know, for months by that time. And they said, well, they kind of whispered to one another, and then they turned to me and they said, hey, why don't you grab a puppet? And yeah, David was kind of left in charge. Kevin wasn't there. And so he had it was his prerogative. And back in those days, things were much looser, and they could just put somebody in who wasn't scheduled and, you know, didn't have a contract and didn't, you know, have, you know, all the official paperwork to go along with it. You know, I don't think people can even be asked to come in and observe anymore, because it's, you know, it's quite a lot to ask somebody to do that without any promise of work or payment. But I was a kid at the time, and I didn't have anything better to do, especially since I quit my job that day to go in the first time.
Right.
I was like in the back row. and just lip syncing along with everybody else who'd actually recorded the track. And it was a dream. I loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
L is the letter that you love the most. L lets you go low, 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 low. Yeah. So that was, yeah. You just ask one question, you wind me up, and I'll just keep talking. But,
no worries.
Yeah. Good times, good memories, for sure.
That's great.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. So how did you eventually end up taking on the roles of Frank's Sesame Street characters, Grover and Bert?
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, it was a rare sight to see Frank on set back in, you know, those days. You know, Cheryl Henson was kind of looking after the Muppet characters on Sesame Street. You know, from the perspective of the you know, the Henson Company, because it was all still, you know, all those characters were still owned outright by the Hensons. And so, you know, I think there was a desire to see those characters that Frank played more often on the show. And, you know, with Frank's availability being what it was, they thought, well, maybe we could get somebody to kind of fill in and keep the characters visible.
Right.
Maybe not even say anything, you know, but just, you know, have the characters there in a big group or whatever, and you know, maybe, you know, if we get lucky, we'll find somebody who could kind of become an understudy for Frank and be there to carry the roles forward. And you know, I had been working on Sesame Street already for a few years. Nothing big, like I'd just get a random call every now and then for a big scene where they needed a lot of people. And I was working on Bear in the Big Blue House.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the mix, you know, my name was there on the list of, you know, in the pool of puppeteers at the time. And that's what they did. They took a list of everybody who was working for the company or had worked for the company in recent years, and had them all come in and audition. So that's what I did. And you know, it was the scariest thing ever, because it was the first time I'd put my hand in any of those puppets. And I knew that, I you know, I've always been kind of a mimic, so I knew that, you know, what I could do with the voices, and I felt this very strong connection to all those characters, when I was, you know, just growing up. They're just a part of me. Like, I'm sure you feel the same way. You know, you watch the show from a very early age, and you're just
right. Yeah.
Constantly bombarded with these characters, and you love them so much. It's just, you feel them inside you. And that's, so I felt really good in that respect. Like, I felt like I had a real connection to these characters. I knew them, I understood them, and I knew that, yeah, I can do, you know, something of, you know, an imitation of these voices. But, you know, and I worked really hard on my puppetry, but I'd never put my hand in any of these characters. So that was the really scary thing when I auditioned. And I was thrown for a loop too. Like, cause I was like, oh, whoa. So this is how it works. And also, oh wow, Frank's hand is a lot larger than mine. I can barely reach where I need to reach in these puppets. But it went well, and I got the call. I got the call, and it was, you know, another one of those days, like, you know, that time when Jane Henson mistook me for already working for the company as a puppeteer. You know, then there was the time I got the call saying, Kevin wants you to come in and observe. And then, you know, and then this call, you know, where we want you to do this. We want you to fill in for Frank. And you know, just over the moon, over the moon. I was just, I can't explain how excited I was. It was great.
It's awesome.
And it still is, you know, I still love getting to perform with these characters, and it's just, yeah, it's a dream come true for me. It's amazing. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, who were some of your favorite celebrity guests to work with? I know you mentioned Samuel Ramey was your first.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Let's see, early on, I remember doing something with Trisha Yearwood.
Okay.
You know, this is really early on. I remember doing some, you know, singing a song. It was, I think it was with Harry Monster and Baby Bear.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and then I also did something with, well, I just came in, and I don't think I actually sang. I think I just did a little bit with Mr. Johnson and Grover, and then Squirrel Nut Zippers, the band, came in and did a big song, Put a Lid on It, I think was the song. And I was a big fan of them, of the Squirrel Nut Zippers, and so that was really cool to be there, and you know, kind of share the scene with them. But those are some early ones. But I mean, since then, so many, yeah.
I think another one of my favorites that was kind of early on that I think you got to work with was Patti LaBelle for a Gospel Alphabet.
Oh yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and you see, you see all the characters.
Love that song.
Oh yeah.
There's so many characters in that, and I even, you know, I recorded vocals for that as well, but I didn't wind up puppeteering any of Frank's characters. Kevin wanted me to assist him on little Chrissy's hands at the piano.
Oh,
So I didn't get to actually puppeteer to any of the tracks that I recorded.
Interesting.
But you know, it's kind of I kind of maybe dodged a bullet there, because at least with Bert, Noel McNeil was performing Bert that day, and he could tell you this story probably better than me. And I don't know, somewhere in the song, I don't know if it was halfway or maybe right at the beginning, I don't know, one of Bert's eyes fell off.
Oh my gosh.
The rest of the bit, Noel's just, you know, he's turning Bert, you know, this way so you can't see the empty space where Bert's eye should be. And he's having to like turn real fast too, if there's any kind of choreography, just so maybe you won't see it, that it's missing. And he's trying to hide behind, you know, other characters. And I'm sure he was just in panic mode. And I don't know, that might have been, that early on might have been very scarring to me. So I'm grateful that Kevin kept me close by. He was really good about that, you know, making sure that,
mm-hmm.
You know, you as much as possible, you weren't thrown into the deep end.
Right.
I mean, it always felt like you were being thrown into the deep end whenever you did something on Sesame Street, and you know, but you know, you're not going to play a character full, you know, a full character with lines and everything your first time out. You're going to be assisting, and then maybe doing some background characters, and I did a lot of that even after I landed, you know, those bigger roles. Yeah.
Awesome. So over the years, Grover had his own segments, including Global Grover and Super Grover 2.0. What were those like?
Oh, those were a lot of fun. Those were a lot of fun. Yeah. Global Grover. Yeah, so we did these, yeah, intros and outros to commissioned films that were shot all over the world. That gave you a little insight to how people live elsewhere. And they're really, really wonderful films. And we had some very funny bits that with Grover, where he's always, you know, he's always wearing a costume or a hat, or, you know, he's in, you know, or he's got some crazy propage, and we'd do some very funny stuff introducing these films and then coming out of them. And it was so much fun. And I remember my parents, one of the things I remember is my parents came and visited me, which they never did in New York. I'm from Texas, and it was a long way away, and my mom didn't like to fly, and so they drove up from Texas to New York, and it'd been quite some time, maybe 10 years since the last time they came and visited me. And they came up, and Frankie Biondo pulled out. He was our number one camera op.
Oh yeah, since day one.
Day one.
And he was just, you know, he's like the mayor of Sesame Street, and he just like welcomed them in, and, you know, got some chairs for them and put them, you know, like, you know, front rows so you can see your kid. And that was amazing. That's something I, you know, personally remember from doing those. And then also, I remember a fellow puppeteer, Jim Martin.
Oh yeah.
Who was always, he was like a mentor to me. I love Jim. I remember he just crystallized it so well for me, because, you know, this is very early on. And he said, one day, these bits you're doing with Global Grover, you know, they're one day, grown. The kids are watching it today. They're going to grow up, and they're going to remember it fondly, and they're going to be, remember Global Grover, remember those funny bits. And he put the things in such a perspective for me. And at the time, it was very hard to see it, but I've remembered that, and now for a long time I always felt like people were, whenever I went out in public, people were always responding to Frank's performances, and because I just didn't have the library of work behind me yet. Mm-hmm. And now they may still be responding more to Frank than me, but I do have the library, it's there, and there are kids who watch that stuff and, you know, are adults now. It's just amazing.
Yes, I love those segments. They're great.
Mayor of Sesame Street. Interesting.
Yeah,
everybody loves Frankie.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, and it's fine if you can't, but I was wondering if maybe we could hear a little bit of Grover.
Well, naturally, yes, of course. I would be happy to do that for you.
Hey, Grover, how you doing?
Hi, Grover.
I am very, very good. Very good. How are all of you?
We're doing very good. How's life on Sesame Street?
Oh, it is so much fun, you know? Yeah. Yeah. This morning I had a play date with Elmo. And we played hide and seek, and actually, if you could keep your voices down, I am still playing with him. He has not found me yet, and I do not want him to find me. Okay?
Okay.
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 That's great.
Yeah.
So, moving on to the late 2000s, Bert and Ernie had their own animated segment, Bert and Ernie's Great Adventure, which was a very fascinating segment. What was it like voicing Bert for that?
Well, originally those were meant just for the international markets. And so we didn't know they were going to wind up on Sesame Street and be seen by a domestic audience at all. And they had their own distinct tone, distinct from, you know, the characters as you would see them normally on Sesame Street. And so it was it was hard. It was really different. From what I was used to doing with Bert and Ernie. And, it was hard in a number of ways because the tone was slightly different, and you're trying to imagine the physicality of the characters before they've been animated. And I find that's always hard to do. You know, you're as a puppeteer, you're in control of how the character looks and moves and behaves, and you have to give up a lot of that control when you voice animation.
Right.
And they were very physical. You know, they wound up being beautiful spots. The Misery brothers, I believe, did those. and they're really cool looking.
Oh, yeah.
But the you know that but it's it was you know it was so different from what we were doing on the show. It took you know it took a lot of it was a lot of work. A lot of work to you know try and imagine, okay, what's happening now? And what do you need from me to you know to make this work? So yeah, I much prefer to puppeteer.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but you know that being said, I'm very proud of the work we did on those, and we did a animated, you know, we've done a lot of animation since, and including the monster at the end of this special. Is that what it's called? I
Oh,
forget.
yeah, right. Based on the book. Yeah,
Yeah.
classic book. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that was, I'm really proud of that. Really proud of that. That was hard. That was really hard too. Just trying to imagine everything that's going to happen, you know, that hasn't been visualized yet. But yeah, you know, somebody's describing it to you, and you're like, okay, so is it going to go across the screen really fast, or is it going to be slow? Is it going to stop in the middle and look this way and that way? And you know, like every little thing, you have to anticipate. But yeah, that turned out really nicely. But again, you know, I love puppets, so if I have a choice, it's always going to be with a puppet.
Right.
Absolutely. So in 2015, you began performing as the understudy for Oscar before eventually inheriting the character. What went into the process of understudying for Oscar?
Well, it was a bit of a different situation, obviously, with Carol than it was with Frank. You know, with Frank, I don't think any of us knew where it was necessarily headed. You know, David Rudman and myself were given Frank's blessing to perform his characters in his absence. But I think, you know, initially at least, it was with the idea that, you know, Frank would show up when he could. You know, with Carol, it was much more a situation where Carol was, you know, he was handing the baton. You know, that was the intention with that knowledge. And so initially, I was lip syncing to Carol on set. Even though he was happy with me doing the voice and everything, you know, we all wanted him to keep on performing in whatever capacity he could for as long as possible. And when Carol wasn't physically able to really, you know, keep his arm up over his head and, you know, assume all these crazy positions we assume, he would still come in and sit off to the side, and you know, watch and read this script and voice the character live, and I would catch his performance in lip sync live, which was a challenge, but I was up for it. And that was really fun. It was fun having him there and
Right.
being able to, like, in between takes, go over and, you know, say, okay, well, what, you know, what would you like? How do you see Oscar doing this? And, you know, he would tell me, and you know, I could go in with, you know, a lot of confidence that, you know, I'm doing what Carol would, because he just told me.
Yeah, right.
And we did that for a season or two, like that, and then you know there, then we did some episodes where, you know, I voiced the character and Carol looped afterwards, and I even remember there was one appearance. So, I think it was on Noggin, the Sunnyside Up show.
Where, oh, on Sprout, yeah.
Yeah, Sprout, yeah.
Yeah, Sprout, uh-huh. On Sprout. Where the idea was that I was just laying down a scratch vocal and Carol was going to come in and loop it. And he came in and looped some of it, but not all of it. And I was just mortified when I saw it, because I was like, oh no, this is, you know, the nightmare situation where you hear both of us side by side. And I remember that day being like, oh, my voice is not in a, it's not in a good place. You know, thank goodness this is just a scratch vocal. So we did it all different ways, but you know, the idea, all, I think, you know, everybody was on board, you know, with this, and Carol, you know, he made the decision to have me do it, and he was happy with it, and I was happy that he was happy. Yeah, because he's the absolute best. He's, you know, when you think of inspirational figures, he's up there, you know, right at the top for me, because he was always so grateful for his lot in life. He loved puppeteering Big Bird and Oscar. It was just the best thing, and you saw that every single day that he came in to work. He was happy to be there, and he kept doing it, and he just kept doing it and doing it, you know, into his 80s. Amazing. Oh, yeah. Absolutely amazing. So so you know, my generation, we all look to Carol and his generation as to, you know, to, for some indication of like, just how long can you do this for?
Right.
Like, what happens to your body when you're like this for so many hours on end?
Of course.
And he proved it could be done for a very long time. You know, so, you know, sadly we lost some, you know, a lot of the others before they, you know, could prove to us just how long you could physically do this as well. But Dave Gohl still does it, and
oh yes,
he's got, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, he's got a lot of, he's endured a lot, you know, a lot of discomfort and a lot of abuse to his body, puppeteering, but he's still doing it. God rest, yeah. God bless him.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, moving on from Sesame Street, we mentioned you also puppeteered on Bear in the Big Blue House, performing Harry the Duck and also kind of doubling for characters too. What was it like working on that show?
That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Yeah, mostly what I did was I doubled for Tyler Bunch and Peter Lentz because they each had two characters, main characters on the show. And so I would wind up playing, you know, one of the characters that I was on screen at the same time, and that was another case where we would do it live.
Mm-hmm.
They Tyler and Peter were both really good at throwing their voices for other characters that they performed while they're performing another character. And I'm not very good at that. I've done it and you know, passably, I think, but I don't like doing it. It's hard. It's a real split focus kind of thing, and they're just so good at that. And I just had a lot of fun catching their performances and lip syncing to them, and just being there on that set and having, I really valued the screen time that I got. Is you know, good practice, good practice. But yeah, in debt to those guys, you know, I think they found themselves needing an extra hand early on, and they said, "Hey, what about Eric?" And so I got called in to do that quite a bit, and it was a lot of fun. And eventually, I got to play a character of my own on the show, even if it was just for an episode or two. And yeah, so and sing a song on too. We got that's probably the first song that I got to record for a show, for a televised show. Got to sing with Harry as Harry with Bear. It's a really, really sweet song.
Oh yeah.
The music for Bear in the Big Blue House is really phenomenal.
Oh yes.
Everything about the show. Mm-hmm. And including the music.
Yeah, Peter Lurie, Brian Woodbury, a whole bunch of wonderful composers on that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a wonderful,
you know,
show.
And we got the benefit of some of their talent on The Book of Pooh as well.
Oh yeah.
They moved on to do that with Mitchell Krieghman, who spearheaded both of those shows.
Yep, and speaking of The Book of Pooh, for those who don't know, it used tabletop puppetry. How would you compare that style of puppetry to, say, like a Muppet style kind of puppetry?
Yeah, well, on very rare occasions, we would do something not too dissimilar on Sesame Street, but it would be very rare. I'm thinking, it's not something we do very, very often. I'd been doing some of that kind of stuff in the live theater that I was doing, around town. But it's very different from the traditional mouth puppets that you typically see for Muppet style productions. There's a lot of collaboration that goes on, a ton. You know, you're always, you know, in puppetry, you know, almost, you know, a lot of the time you're working with assistants and having to work in concert, but usually not as many assistants. Usually it's not as many people working on a single character at a time.
Right.
As you have with tabletop puppetry and what we did on Book of Pooh. So that, you know, there's, and when you have so many moving parts, so many people who need to work as one, rehearsal really helps. So we were rehearsing just nonstop, it felt like, on that show. If we weren't, we had a room dedicated just off to the side of the floor where you know, we would take turns going in and working with our teams to, you know, be prepared for the next scene. It was very, very, you know, it required a lot of discipline, because we were also lip syncing to pre-recorded performances. And so that, you know, that was good because we all could go off and listen to the same vocal tracks and get familiar with the same rhythms. And then, you know, when we'd get together to rehearse, we at least had that as a groundwork. And it was, yeah, but it was, I just remember rehearsing. You know, we'd do a scene and then it's like, okay, next scene, what are we doing? And I had all sorts, you know, I had to, like, the way I did it, and I think a number of the other performers did too. I played the head and torso of the characters I performed, Piglet and Roo.
Oh, nice.
And so we, you know, and Tyler did that with Tigger, and Peter did that with Winnie, and we, you know, I think we all did kind of the same thing where we listened to the track over and over, and we might make some notes in the script, you know, some ideas, you know, of, you know, what the arms and legs could be doing at the same time. And then we'd work with our team, and, you know, get everybody in sync, and they'd come up with great ideas too. And, you know, it was a real collaboration. It was a lot of fun. but it was you know, one of the first projects that used a virtual set. And we shot on green, and we were standing mostly with green tables. Everything's green, and that was a real trip. And we would see, usually we would see the comp as we were performing live. And there was a lot of downtime because there was there'd be glitches with the computers and software. But it was a real trip, you know, just being transported to this other, you know, virtual environment. But there was also a lot of green.
Yes.
And we,
yeah,
shot.
I've seen a bunch of behind the scenes pictures of it. It's just crazy because, you know, like each character, like you mentioned, took like three different people to like work on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we did, like, I feel like we did two seasons almost back to back. We shot for over a year. I feel like, I could be wrong. And we shot for a long time. And it in just going into an environment where there's just one color that you see all day long. You know, I'm really curious what, you know, if we had a psychologist on set, kind of tracking the effects of, you know, this group of people just seeing the color green all day long for a year. You know, what, you know, how that affected all of us. I feel like it you know, I know that it affected me somehow. I'm not sure.
I'm sure.
Right, yeah.
I'd be curious to find out.
Yeah. So, in terms of the Disney Muppets, what was your first? Well, I know you said, of course, it was before, you know, the whole Disney thing, but what was your first project with the Muppet Show, Muppets?
Okay, well, let's see. I think kind of a similar thing happened over there with the classic Muppet Show characters. You know, they were getting a lot of calls for Frank's characters, particularly Miss Piggy, and they wanted, you know, somebody to be able to stand in for Frank when he wasn't available. So it was the same kind of process, and you know, all these auditions, you know, all these people auditioned, and you know, I think I was, you know, I was New York based, and yeah, the Hensons knew me, but I don't think the whole operation in Hollywood and was as familiar with my work. And so I think there was, you know, I just had to prove myself all over again. And so the first thing I did actually is I did the voice for Miss Piggy, and somebody else puppeteered it for a Virgin Atlantic commercial. Which I don't think even aired over here, you know. Yeah, I think it was Virgin, pretty sure it was. And you know, and that's the way they were gonna handle it for a little while. Like, oh, Eric will just do the voice. Like, okay, that didn't last. Like, I think that's the only thing I voiced and didn't puppeteer, you know, back in that, at that time, that was popular at the time. And I did that. It was just like interview style stuff, and I made an appearance on the Today Show, but the first thing that anybody probably saw was something for Muppet Fest. Pre-taped message for a, you know, a fan fest in Hollywood. I can't remember where they held it, but you know, it's like a convention for Muppet fans. It's the one and only time they did it. Mm-hmm. And they did, you know, they did a live Muppet show there, and there all sorts of really wonderful experiences for Muppet fans, and you know, a lot of, you know, personal contact with the Muppet performers and everything. But I recorded something from Miss Piggy. And it was just probably the most perfect way to introduce me as Miss Piggy to fans, because, well, one, I wasn't there in person, so nobody could, you know, put me in a chokehold. But but two, nobody really expected Frank to show up to something like this, so it made complete sense for Miss Piggy to show up in a videotaped message, and so, like, it just seemed, oh yeah, Frank's not going to come to Muppet Fest, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't expect that. Yeah. So yeah, naturally what he did was he did a little pre-taped message. That's nice. Let's watch that. And they showed this pre-taped message to people. And, you know, in whereas the at Muppet Fest, you could see you know, all the performers who were there, you could see them and see who was performing who. You couldn't see me, and I think you know, if we fooled anybody, you know, if we were going to fool anybody, that was the way we were going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
And this short greeting, and it was kind of, and, you know, once you get the blessing of the fans, you know, then the rest of the world kind of takes their cue off of, you know, the real diehards and hardcore fans.
Right.
That's usually the way it is. You know, you disgruntle some fans, and then the rest of the world just kind of picks up on that, and yeah, you know, yeah, I didn't like that either. It's like, did you see it? No, but I hear it's awful. Right. So I don't know. It felt like a good way to introduce my version of Miss Piggy to folks. And yeah, and then after that, you know, it wasn't too long after that that I wound up doing, we did Weezer music video.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was my first time performing Fozzie.
Oh.
I remember Steve Whitmire turning to me and saying, "Hey, why don't you grab Fozzie? We could really use him in this scene right here." I was like, "Is that okay? People okay with that?" Yeah. And I mean, the idea was that I think that same week that we were shooting that, we were doing a read-through of the Very Merry Muppet Christmas movie, and I was reading Fozzie for that too, and you know, but I hadn't performed them yet, and so that was the first time I performed Fozzie, and then we did the Very Merry Muppet Christmas movie, and. Yeah, it was just like off at the races, you know, just this huge thing that came very shortly after these smaller appearances here and there. And that, you know, that was a great experience.
Absolutely.
Great experience. Yeah, yep. Really, you know, after that, I felt like, okay, I, something like that, you're either going to crumble or you're going to soar. And I don't, you know, I felt pretty good after doing that, at least. You know, I felt
yeah.
like all along I felt like I was up to the task, but then you got to prove it and
of
prove
course,
it to others,
yeah.
but also to yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I know a lot of Muppets fans are wondering, is it fine if we can hear a bit of both Fozzie and Miss Piggy?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I am always available, okay? You know, weddings, bar mitzvahs, podcasts, you know, all absolutely anytime. Just give me a call, please. Please.
Okay.
We'll do Fozzie.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to get moi on the air.
Right, because you're so, you know, busy with, you know, your fashion job and everything.
Yes, exactly. You understand. You understand moi. Thank you.
Wait a second. Well, you're not recording this right now, are you?
That sounds great. How's Kermit doing?
What, you want me to do a Kermit voice now, too?
I said, how's Kermit? I was asking.
Come on, Jake. You gotta be more specific with this.
I was asking Miss Piggy, how's
oh,
Kermit?
Well.
Oh, that's great. So, before we wrap up, I know Matt had a question about one of the recent things you got to do
I
with
do,
the Muppets.
I do. There
yeah,
is one
absolutely.
Thing I want. There is one thing I wanted to show. Though I've had this for about 8 years now, and I couldn't resist showing this. Could we have a post production?
Oh my god!
Yeah.
This is Guide to Life. This is Miss Piggy's first book. It's not in the best shape, obviously. This was released way back in 1981.
Yeah.
Mine is a 83 reprinting, but I don't care. It is.
Who's the author credited on there?
Well, it is Miss Piggy, but
yeah.
Let me just look here. I believe.
Do they name anybody else?
Yes, they do. They name Henry Beard was the
that's,
one.
That's yes. I met Henry Beard. When I was first starting out, and he said, you know, I wrote Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. I said, what? That's amazing. That's amazing. So cool. You know, I feel like everywhere I go, I meet a friend of the Muppets.
Aww.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
so cool. And somebody,
Aww,
you know, and Jim and Frank, they, you know, made the rounds. They went everywhere. They, you know, they came into contact with so many people. I tell you, like, for the first, I don't know, first 10 years I was doing this, I everywhere I went, I met somebody who had worked with Jim and or Frank. And they just always, inevitably, had a wonderful story to share and just this deep, profound love for Jim and Frank and all of the Muppets. And it was so great to come across that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, especially when I was starting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had this. It was actually a gift to me for my 16th birthday. Goodness, that was like almost 8 years ago. And post-production, could we get a shot of especially this photo right here? I mean, I gotta say, Miss Piggy, you look stunning in these photos. They're amazing. Just the outfits of these, even way back when, they're just amazing. Even the black and white ones too. Let me see if I can find one real quick.
Oh, there's one on the back.
There's one on the back right here.
Yes.
It is an absolutely wonderful.
Aren't I
book.
Beautiful?
And, yes, yes, you definitely.
I can't
are.
Really see the pictures all that well from here. But it
Let
doesn't
me,
matter.
There we go. Oh yeah,
if
there
it's
we go.
Moi, I know It looks good.
Yes, it definitely does. Absolutely, for sure. Again, I've had this since 2016. If you folks don't have a copy, get it. I'm serious about this. It's really funny, a wonderful book.
Very funny.
Oh yes, absolutely.
I think I want to say that Henry Beard wrote the monologue that Miss Piggy delivered in honor of Lily Tomlin at when she was awarded the Mark Twain Prize for comedy.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's wonderful. So one of your newest projects The Muppets Mayhem.
Love Muppets Mayhem.
Absolutely amazing.
Love that series. So great.
Absolutely amazing. Could you share any stories from working on that?
Oh, and first, congrats on the nominations.
Yes, congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Yes,
of course.
Could not forget about that, of course.
It's very cool that the art of puppetry is being recognized with its own categories now. It's really, really amazing. And so Muppets Mayhem, a lot of fun. I had so much fun doing that. Partly because I didn't have to carry the same kind of load that I do on a lot of other projects. I think the pressure was kind of off me. I didn't have to learn a lot of lines, because animal can't really talk. So, but. No, the quality of the show is just so high. It's so wonderful working on these shows where you have such talented writers and everybody is there with the same goal in mind. Everybody wants to be there too. Like,
yeah,
there's nobody, nobody who's just, they just said yes because, it's a job. And no, everybody loved being there. It was a real, we formed a really nice family very quickly. And I'm sad that we're not all coming back together to do it again anytime soon, at least.
Yeah.
But I'm very grateful too that we had the opportunity to come together and make some magic,
Yeah, and there, I just love what I love most about Muppets Mayhem was the kind of relationship between, the mayhem and then the human cast, Moog and all those wonderful human cast.
He's incredible. He's an incredible actor and such a nice guy. Like the moment you meet him, you he puts a smile on your face. He's just that's who he is. He's just one of those people who is just a bundle of positivity and you want to be his friend. He's perfectly cast and the rest of the cast is incredible too. And, Lily and Sarah and Anders, all terrific. But I loved the show for a bundle of reasons. The writing was spectacular, but that says a lot too. Like there's a lot that goes into writing successfully for the Muppets, and to take you know, to take these lesser known Muppet characters, you know, take the, you know, they're Muppets to begin with.
Yeah.
These are, you know, kind of niche characters, and to treat them respectfully and faithfully, and at the same time broaden their story and go places that we've never seen them go to.
Absolutely.
I think it's just remarkable. It's remarkable.
Yes, absolutely. You
know, absolutely.
Something absolutely that you've never seen with those characters before. And and yet, you know, it still all feels very, very in character, very faithful to to who they are and to the Muppets as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. So this last question that Jake is about to ask, we usually save for last, and we ask every guest this question. Go ahead, Jake.
Thank you, Matt. So, of course, this podcast is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. There you go. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of? Or in your own words, how would you define the word nostalgia?
For me, nostalgia is getting to relive my childhood through the eyes of my children. I love sharing the things that made me happy when I was a child with my own kids. Yeah, there's nothing better than that. And then, you know, some of it might stick. A lot of it probably won't for my kids, but it's, you know, the act of sharing that is really putting nostalgia to use, to some use, I feel like, you know, I mean, you can go down memory lane and smile about the things that made you happy when you were younger.
Yeah.
You know, being able to share it is really special. I've really enjoyed that. And this time of year, especially, it's
a lot
of fun to watch the old Rankin and Bass holiday special.
Oh yeah, classics.
Absolutely, yes.
I get teary-eyed every single time I watch A Year Without a Santa Claus.
Yeah, classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was a blast.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. Yes, it was a blast for me too. I hope you know, you heard some new stories and I didn't bore you too much.
No worries at all.
No worries.
Not at all.
And for what you're doing, and you know, first of all, you know, congratulations with all the Muppets Mayhem and everything. And also, and thank you, and you know, thank you so much for what you've done to be a part of our lives, and for what you're doing to keep the legacy of the characters alive. You know, with Sesame and the Muppets and everything. What you're doing, I think we're thinking you're doing such an incredible job, and for what you're doing, it means so much for the future generations. And keep up the great work where you're doing. And can I wait? What's next in store?
I can't tell you how much that means to me. Thank you. Yeah. I mean,
of course.
You know, it's
my pleasure.
I do what I can to keep the legacy alive, but you know, it's you all, it's the fans who really keep it alive.
Absolutely.
So,
of course.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, keep waving that flag.
Absolutely.
And,
yes.
And I appreciate you all.
Absolutely.
We do.
Thank you. You too. Likewise.
Yes. Absolutely. Well,
thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day, Eric. Keep in touch. I'll let you know when this goes up.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care, all.
All right. Bye bye. Enjoy your holidays.
See ya. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And it's goodbye from us as well, everyone. We absolutely enjoyed our time with Eric Jacobson. Season 54 of Sesame Street is currently streaming on Max. Muppets Mayhem and a whole bunch of other Muppet projects he's done are streaming on Disney Plus, so check out those. But again, thank you all for joining us. Keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. And as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Hello there, it's me again. I just wanted to come back and just say some final words. As you know by now, this episode marks our 200th Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode. My goodness, I can't believe I'm saying that. We certainly have come a long, long way since our very beginnings. I just want to take this moment on behalf of all of us and just say thank you to not only the guests who have expressed their enthusiasm of being on the show, but those who have said very kind words about the show and about us. Thank you so much. It really means a lot. Thank you to everybody who's also helped us get guests, too. We truly appreciate it very much. But most importantly, thank you, our viewers and listeners. Your support and enthusiasm and excitement means more than you could ever imagine. Thank you. Also, very recently, our YouTube channel hit 1,000 subscribers. Yes, 1,000. I can't believe that either. So, what did we do to celebrate? A live stream. If you'd like to check it out, head on over to our YouTube channel and go to the live section. You'll see the 1K subscriber celebration. And it was a lot of fun. And we will definitely do more of these in the future. So stay tuned on that on our YouTube page. So what's ahead for us? Well, you'll just have to wait and see. There's not a lot I can say right now, but what I can say is that we have a lot of exciting interviews ahead, a lot of wonderful episodes, and a lot of really cool stuff coming up very, very soon. So you'll want to stay tuned. But for now, thank you. Thank you for your support over the last 200 episodes, and we're really excited for the next 200. Until we meet again, from all of us, this is Matt Bingle. Thank you very much for joining us. And until next time, as always, keep nostalgia alive. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.